The Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny is presented for the people by Caesars Sportsbook, the greatest sports betting app of all time. Download it. You must be 21 or older.
Welcome back to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast where one of the hosts thinks a touchback is just another way of saying pet. Petting. That's Lenny. I touch his bag a lot. I didn't execute that perfectly.
Yeah, it's all right. I got it. You just say it with confidence and then pretend like everyone else is dumb for not getting it.
That's Dominique Foxworth, the host of the excellent Dominique Foxworth Show podcast. You can get wherever you get your pods. Dominique, it's good to see you, bud. Coming off of probably the worst Monday night game of the year. It's up there. Ugh. I don't know. There's been some...
This one was made worse by the just sadness, like the parade of injuries starting. Like, you know, like I felt before the game got really bad as far as football is concerned, just like, damn, Island, how could anybody play this game?
Crazy. Yeah. Even like there was like Kyle Duggar who hit Trey McBride. Maybe it was someone else. Maybe it was Tavani who had an excellent game. But there was one hit. I was like, oh, my God. Jesus. Okay. So the way I want to talk about this game, because I don't want – obviously, we're not going to spend 20 minutes talking about this game, is I want to talk about both of the teams. I want to do kind of like a post-mortem look forward. Cardinals season's over, obviously. And, you know, Kyler Murray incurred a season-ending injury. I don't think we've gotten an update on it yet, but it's – Josh Weinfuss, who covers the Cardinals for us, reported ACL out for the season, probably going to go into next season. So I want to talk about that. But first, I want to talk about the Patriots, who are still in playoff contention. Actually, Dominique, they're in the driver's seat. I mean, if they win, they can get into the playoffs as the wild card seed because they have the head-to-head over the Chargers. However, they are playing the Raiders, fine. And then I don't know if this is the right order, but it's the Dolphins, the Bengals, and the Bills. Whereas the Chargers, they have the Titans this week, which is a difficult matchup for them for a number of reasons. But then they have the Rams, the Colts, and the Broncos. So both teams have 7 wins, but all of the advanced metrics out there favor the Chargers because of their strength of schedule. Let's start there. Do you agree with the prediction models?
Try to separate my heart from my head because my heart is bolt up. Like, I think anybody, if you want to see either one of these teams in the playoffs, it's clear that the one you want to see is the one with the internet's hero, Justin Herbert.
We're going to talk about that later, by the way.
Yeah,
we're going to give that a full accounting in the second half.
I was not going to allow us to leave without doing that. But to be clear, that's what I would want. So I'm glad that the numbers suggest that's true. Also, I think the Patriots defense is like, this is a team that Bill Belichick would love. Is they run screen passes like they just came out.
So many screens.
They ran so many screen passes that it had me thinking about the history of screen passes. And I imagine that the first team to come up with the screen pass, that was like innovative. They were like, oh, this is hot. We can drop back and make it like a pass, but it's really just another way to run the ball. Like, Bill Belichick was running, and I guess he's not the offensive coordinator, but it does feel like his fingerprints are all over this offense and that he wants to drag this game, any football game, they want to drag into the mud and hope that the other team makes a mistake before they do. And it's not a fun way to watch or play football.
So on one hand, it makes sense that there would be a fair amount of screens in this game because the Patriots' offensive line, for whatever reason, is – I actually thought they played pretty well in this game. So, you know what? Never mind. I actually thought they held up pretty decently in pass pro. However, we do know the Cardinals love to blitz. So, it made sense that, you know, they would go to the screens. But the extent of them, the inefficacy of them was, I mean, it's gotten to the point where, like, when they show Mac Jones freaking out, I'm on his side. Like,
me too.
I think America is on his side. Like, he also has a way of dropping F-bombs that feels unique. I don't know why. He's slanging that. They didn't let him throw much else. So, when their most effective plays were when they would go vertical and send their tight ends up the seams. And he hit Hunter Henry twice, which, you know, the Cardinals play a lot of cover three. So again, that's a pretty effective play call. Like, he can throw, you know, I obviously he's regressed some this season, and, you know, this is going to be a topic of much debate headed into next season, how the Patriots feel about him having at one point benched him. You know, was he set up to fail? I don't think, like, I'm not the biggest Max Jones fan in the world. And I think he is not, he appears to be one of those quarterbacks that does not rise above his circumstances, but the circumstances suck, Dominique.
Yeah, I would, I feel like this season is making me more of a Mac Jones supporter than any other time, because, like, I think last year we had to deal with people overselling how good he was, which, like, the inevitable response to someone who, like us, who watch a lot of football and, like, kind of know what we're looking for, is like, cool it. Like, let's calm down. He's okay, but let's not pretend like he's actually better than you pretend that he is. But then I feel like this, involuntary emotional reaction to watching these game plans, and where I'm like, damn, give a man a chance. Like, he threw a couple interceptions. Yeah, that's fine. It sucks. You're going to lose some games here and there. But you're like, I don't know. It feels like he's in a beauty competition and they're like making him wear a paper bag and then are upset that he can't place. It's like, get a man a dress. Give him some shoes. Let him display his talent. Give him a banjo. I don't know what they do to display the talent, but they just pushed him out there with no makeup. And then you're going to be like, well, you can't turn the ball over. We're going to lose. So we're going to punish you by throwing quick outs and screens and running the ball on every first down. It just feels unfair to me.
Oh, my God.
I'd like to see some sequins or something.
I mean, I was thinking about Love is Blind, which I finally finished. And
I was right. Everyone's trash.
Yeah, everybody. It really, nobody came out of that looking good. Even the couple that I thought looking good, then with the post-show tea being spilled, didn't come out looking so great. I picture Bill Belichick picking Matt Patricia in the pods, and then Matt Patricia. But that doesn't make sense because he knew what Matt Patricia was. Yeah. And that analogy doesn't stand. It was I don't think it's dramatic to say, it is dramatic, but I'm going to say it anyways, that having Matt Patricia / Joe Judge in whatever capacity run this offense is probably the worst mistake Bill Belichick's made in his entire coaching career.
What? It's quite dramatic.
But it's more that he's made so many good decisions. You know, it's like,
yeah, that's not even the worst Matt Patricia mistake he made. It's like allowing Matt Patricia to coordinate his defense that year that they lost to the Eagles in the Super Bowl is probably a bigger mistake, because that team had a chance. This team does not have a chance, and Matt Patricia's making it worse.
I want to say something optimistic about the Patriots, though, which is what's a bummer about...
Hold on, time out. He got a job immediately after. Oh, to be white. All right, go ahead.
And he held on to it for a minute. Lions fans got to be watching Detroit just like, yo. Yo. Lions fans who are like so happy, drinking their Honolulu Blue Kool-Aid, just the world is their oyster. This season, whatever happens, happens. They're set up for success. They got that Rams pick. It's a great time to be a Lions fan. I would say it's not a horrible time to be a Patriots fan, because as upsetting as the offense has been, I think the defense has wildly outperformed expectations. And when I watch them week to week, they do have young talent. Like, this is a defense that turned over a fair amount this season. I was not optimistic about this past defense as a result. And they've found good players at every level now. That makes me think that what they're doing is sustainable. Like, you know, Matt Judon's amazing, and, you know, he's not a spring chicken. But you find, and this was, I thought, one of the stories of the night, Josh Uche emerging, you know, taking over the game at various points. Not just, you know, he was like a designated pass rusher for the Patriots before, but now he looks like he can become an every down kind of player, a real, real pass rusher. And you guys got, I mentioned Tavai, who's been awesome for them at linebacker. Cornerbacks that they
have.
There
we go. Get to the good stuff.
Well, I thought this would be the worst cornerback group in the league. Yeah. And I mean, the Jalen Mills is hurt. It doesn't, I mean, obviously that Cardinals offense is not effective, but they, you know, when you look at Belichick's last few drafts, he has hit on a lot of young defensive players, Barmore, Duggar, Jack Jones and Marcus Jones. Like the future of the defense, I would argue, is bright. The problem is it's hard to feel good about this offense with nobody steering the ship.
Throwing Marcus Jones a screen pass that he took for a touchdown a couple weeks ago had to be like porn to Bill Belichick.
Because they combined the things. He had a ball again last night. He had a good end around or whatever.
It combines the things that he loves most. It's like low risk offense with defensive backs. It had to just make him so happy. Yeah, he's Marcus Jones is great. Jack is good too. Like this, that is impressive. It's exciting, but it's still like their offense is. It's not good, and I don't see much reason for optimism. I think I was listening to Mike Tannenbaum this morning trying to sell it, and I was like, yeah, no, they don't have skill players. They actually don't. And yeah, they don't really protect well. Like, there's nothing to be excited about over there. And the whole, like, scuttlebutt about Tom Brady potentially going back to New England. Like, he's not going to go do that. He don't want to go be a part of that.
I don't think that's great for anyone because with like Brady, I don't know why, like the Bucs aren't a good situation, but neither is New England offensively. And then for the Patriots, it's like, you know, Brady's not playing super great right now. Mm-mm. Sorry. I was just, I would say they're Ramondre Stevenson has been their most dynamic and fun skill player. It's an ankle injury. I'm trying to see, I don't see any like crazy updates. So hopefully that means he's okay. But yeah, it's, you know, as good as the finds that there have been on defense, offensively, just the decisions, the skill players added, the trades, trade for Devontae. I mean, it's just hasn't, I mean, Jacoby Myers and Kendrick Bourne are fine players, but they just need more talent. I remember when they splurged last offseason, they got Hunter Henry and Jonnu Smith and Aguilar, and it just hasn't worked out for them. So it's going to be some tough decisions to be made next year, including the quarterback position. So yeah, it's that's going to be tricky. They got to get that right to hopefully not waste the defense. All right, so the Cardinals, Kyler Murray, that's really ACL non-contact injury, especially because will probably take him into next season. So this is an organization that's at a real crossroads. They extended the GM, Steve Keim, and Cliff Kingsbury for the season. That's one of the ones where, like, everybody was aghast and everybody was right. Like that was the world's most predictable bad decision. Kyler, they're tied to financially for a while. So, Dominique, I guess let's say you're Mike Bidwell, you're the owner of the Cardinals, what would be your game plan this offseason to try to, like, I don't know.
It changed a lot last night because for me, it had been all around Kyler Murray and finding, which I guess that's, he let Steve Keim build around Kyler Murray with the Cliff Kingsbury hire, which was, I guess, supposedly someone who could get the best out of Kyler Murray. That hasn't worked out. But I do think that the one piece in this, and we've talked about this before, the one piece that they have that is harder to replace is that quarterback spot that seemed more certain last year than it does now. So they signed the extended contract. I'm assuming it's probably 3 or 4 years before they could reasonably get out of it. Not that they should want to or do want to, but that has to be the goal, is to build around him. And also, like, I consider like somewhat of an organizational reset, which seems difficult. I think you can rebuild more quickly than people perceive, but this Steve Keim's, I guess, experiment has run its course. And I think the first thing you do is figure out someone else who can have the long-term vision for this organization and get that hire in first and then go from there.
So I'm looking at their top cap hits next year. It's DeAndre Hopkins, who would be $23 million in dead cap, so he's not going anywhere. DJ Humphreys to tackle, Buda Baker, then Kyler, Marquise Brown, Zach Ertz, Robbie Anderson.
I forgot about that Marquise Brown situation.
Yeah.
They traded for him.
And then Rodney Hudson, James Conner, J.J. Watt, who you can move on from some of these players, some of these veterans. I guess my feeling is those are Marquise Brown and DeAndre Hopkins are probably going to still be your top two offensive weapons. Drafted Trey McBride early. He's been playing more as of late. I think you have to go into next season with a priority to make improvements in the trenches on the offensive and defensive line so that when Kyler Murray does come back offensively, you're in a better position. Defensively, there's issues in the secondary too, but that would be, I would say, the number one thing that they have to do is improve in the trenches. I do still think it's an attractive coaching job. However, maybe that's crazy, but obviously you might not have Kyler at the beginning of the year, but I actually think, it's an organization that's going to be in a bit of a rebuild. So there's not going to be a ton of pressure on the new coach to win immediately. The expectations will not be high for this team next year. And you do have a quarterback who you know is capable of high play. I compare this to a job like the Denver job where you have an elite defense, but you're tied to Russell Wilson. I would rather take the Arizona job, especially if I was an offensive minded coach, believing that I can turn things around there and that I've got some leeway.
Yeah, I mean, one of the more attractive things is that division is up in the air. I mean, the Broncos job is scary. It's going to be scary in that division. Like, you're looking at a wild card normally. So I think that makes the job more attractive. Kyler Murray's injury, I think that there's some questions floating around about his maturity and selfishness and all that stuff, which was kicked off. I mean, I think there was, whispers about it. But when Patrick Peterson kind of went public with it, then everyone had, license to talk about it. So whoever gets in, I think that Kyler, you need to try to sell Kyler on this and use this time, this injury time, as a time to get focused on growing up or whatever it is. You live and die with how he goes. So, yeah, I guess the one thing that I push back is, there's so many other questions.
Yeah.
There's so many holes. You started by saying focus on the trenches, but then you name three other things that they need to address. I guess finding quarterback is the hardest thing, but I'm not even sure that they're certain about that just because they extended him. It feels like a bit of a scary proposition to go in there and rebuild it quickly.
They are 12th in cap space right now. That's before clearing some of those contracts. And then it's probably going to be a pretty high draft pick that they've got next year because the pick that they traded for Marquise Brown was the 2022 pick. I wouldn't be surprised if this ends up being a top five pick the way things are going in Arizona. I think it might be six right now. So there's going to be, there's ammunition to improve this roster. I don't think Steve Keim should be the one doing it. I mean, I've been pretty clear or outspoken, I guess, over the last few years. I'm not impressed by the job that he's done with this roster, the draft picks, the way it's been built, frankly. So that's another thing I think Bidwell, man, that is a lot of money to move on from. But, we care not for the pockets of the ultra wealthy. What we believe, what I think they should do is you want to bring in a GM and a head coach in lockstep who are committed to Murray and then committed to the rebuild together.
And I mean, you need to commit to them for the rebuild too, is an important thing, I think, is we saw with the Lions the last. Yeah, you shouldn't commit to those guys because it wasn't in a rebuild and they gave you no reason to commit to them. But we saw with the Lions job is they found their guy and they gave him a 6-year contract. I think that's important, which I guess you can afford to cut ties and there's no cap ramifications. But I think there's something to be said for showing some level of commitment when you know that you're in a rebuild.
Let me ask you this as we wrap. What do you think they will do?
Nothing.
You had to. You think they'll keep Cliff? I don't think they'll keep Cliff.
Well, I guess maybe they'd try to help Cliff find another job so he can offset some of that salary. But why do you re-sign him? I don't know. It just doesn't make sense to me. I can't climb into anybody's brain. What I think they should do is move on from both of them. I have no faith that they will or that he will.
Yeah. I just think the Cliff-Kyler relationship, both on and off the field, has so clearly run its course. And you can't move on from I don't think you should move on from the quarterback, frankly, because I just think the potential is there. So, it shouldn't be too – you and I have talked about this. Looking across the league at how creative offensive play calling has been with dual-threat quarterbacks, it should not be hard to find someone who can get more out of him. Kyler Murray was such an incredible deep ball thrower, and that's just gone this year.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's, so it should be better. So we'll see. We'll see. That's, we believe what they should do. It's different from what they will do. But of course, we won't know the answer to that for some time. All right. Let's come back and talk about some teams that are more relevant. All right, people, we are brought to you by Caesars Sportsbook, the greatest sports betting app of all time. See, it's not just about the daily promos, odds boosts, or the hundreds of ways to wager. It's about the immortal words of Caesar himself. You bet, you get with Caesars Rewards. Every bet you place on the app, no matter the outcome, earns towards exclusive perks at Caesars Rewards destinations everywhere. Hotel stays, concert tickets, bonuses, and more. Download the Caesars Sportsbook app, become a Caesars Rewards member today, and get more with every wager. Must be 21 years or older to gamble. Gambling problem? Call or text 1-800-522-4700.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors. I do, you do, we all do, big, small. And when we keep them bottled up, as I sometimes have had happen in the past, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/MinaShow today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/MinaShow, MinaShow.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. And I have to say, speaking from experience recently, having tried it for the first time in Detroit, it is absolutely delicious. Right now, you can get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Okay, we are back. Winners and woofs. I will go first. A winner. It's the Los Angeles Chargers. It's not Justin Herbert. It's not Brandon Staley. It's not the Chargers defense. It's all of it. The whole team was a massive winner this week, beating Miami. There are so many things to talk about here. I want to start with the defense, however, because I know that's something that you're passionate about. I'm sure you have a lot of opinions about. I'll start with the question that is on everyone's mind this week. Do you think the Chargers laid down a blueprint to stop the Miami Dolphins?
I think they put something out there that was easier to copy than what the 49ers did. I think that you are part of this Chargers list of things that are big winners, where you're going to pretend like you're not a big winner this week. It was like the game of the internet of the Twitter season was you versus Emmanuel Acho. And you got a big win, and then you rubbed salt in the wound afterwards. It was pretty tremendous, impressive win. Were you nervous? Because, like, everyone was, it was kind of a big deal. People were very into, like, this particular, and you came to represent most analysts.
I wasn't nervous, but I was preemptively annoyed because if things, I didn't think things would go that way, by the way. I didn't think the Chargers, I thought Herbert would play well because he usually does, but I didn't think the Chargers defense would be able to stop the Miami offense. So that was surprising to me. And I wasn't nervous, but I was like preemptively annoyed by all the bad faith, because, you know, I figured this would be another round of Herbert versus Tua and making it about the quarterbacks as opposed to, you know, analyzing the game or whatever. So I was preemptively annoyed by the discussion that would ensue.
And then you ended a man's career. All right. So I think, I mean, he threatened to go away and then you was like, see ya. All right. So anyway, to your original question, it's a tough spot that Tua and Mike McDaniel and the Dolphins are in because they have offensive line limitations. And they want to get rid of the ball quickly because of those limitations. In this game, we saw some of the issues that the Dolphins had were because Tua was inaccurate at times. But a lot of the issues, I think, were because he wants to get rid of the ball quickly. And they were pressing their receivers, which is something I would advise against. Is like, don't get up there and get in Tyreek Hill's space. No, I wouldn't. Would have before that game. No, okay. I'm saying I would not still advise that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I saw the way that they did it. But I mean, honestly, I still would be nervous about it. It's not a fear that goes away. I don't know if it was this year. It might have been last year. But I remember Tyreek Hill had the best numbers against press coverage out of anybody because, as we've talked about before, he's, with the exception of height, he has everything you would need is like quickness and speed, and he's strong, and he can attack the ball in the air. And if you miss at the line and you're jammed, then it's a touchdown. So it's still kind of scary. But what I saw happening so many times, the timing being off, and the thing that we celebrate for Tua is also like a drawback, is almost his machine-like precision.
Yeah.
Is like he's ready to go. And when everyone else is on that same page, you're like, golly, that's good. And then if you take 0.2 off of the receiver's speed and Tua's ready to throw and he's not open, then you see the difference between Tua and Herbert. Is I noticed that Tua he wasn't terrible. Like, he wouldn't like melt down completely, but he would scramble and maybe run for 6 yards or throw the ball away. And Herbert, when the play would break down, he'd roll to the right and then throw back across his body a perfect dime to Mike Williams. So, like, that is the difference.
Yeah, I think there's a lot in there. The difference is that second reaction ability, right? And that's why teams are trying to draft for that now. It's not just Herbert; it's across the NFL. You see, like, the elite quarterbacks tend to have that ability. I think the word that you hit there, machine, is kind of the one that keeps coming to mind, because the Dolphins, like Mike McDaniel, like, he built a machine, essentially. Mm-hmm. And Tua was the perfect operator of that machine because he has a quick release, he's accurate on his first read, and he had total faith in the offense. I think that's what was always so impressive to me, or at least I think what, when you watched the Dolphins offense, why they clicked was like, Tua knew if he made that throw and he, like, you know, looked a certain way, the receiver would be there. So what happens when you throw a little sand in the machine and the receiver's not there exactly when you expect it? Because, like, the Dolphins offense, we're making this more about the Dolphins and Chargers, but they have more vertical RPOs than any team. The depth of target on their RPO, this actually dates back to last season as well, is longer. Like, they are able to turn those into 10 to 15 yard gains plus, even sometimes. But however, again, that's so timing based. The ball has to come out so quick. The receiver has to be there. So Brandon Staley saw what D'Amico Ryans also saw, which is if you press those receivers, you're going to lose some. You're going to lose a few. Michael Davis fell down one. You know, by the way, had a hell of a game. But the disruption of the timing is the most important part to stopping this offense. The difference between the Niners and the Chargers, and I think why we were pessimistic about the Chargers' ability, first, the Niners did press less, but they also played, you know, mostly their usual quarters, you know, zone looks. However, Tua was rattled not just by the pressing in the beginning of the game, but also the pressure, the threat of pressure.
Right.
I would say in this game, he was rattled by the coverage because the Chargers were sticky and they took away the middle of the field. Whether it was through leverage, their cornerbacks, or dropping their linebackers, or their safeties, they took away the middle of the field, and Tua was rattled by that. So I think, to go back to the original question, the blueprint, that's more replicable than what the Niners did, which was based on talent.
Yeah.
Dominique, the Niners in that game, 61% of Tua's targets were to open receivers, NGS open 3 yards or more. In the Chargers game, it was about a third. Those dudes were not open. So I just want to praise to Staley and then praise to those Chargers defensive backs and linebackers for executing that, man. Because, like, Derwin James didn't play in this game. Bryce Callahan didn't play in this game. Alohi Gilman, Michael Davis, Drew Tranquil, Asante Samuel Jr. balled out. So credit to them for executing that game plan to perfection.
Against the unstoppable machine that we saw early in this season, and that they deserve a lot of credit. It's not only their execution, but like the confidence to do that. Like I don't know. It's something that I don't think we talk very. Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say in a way that still like lets me keep my facade of like football manly man. I would have been nervous as. Like, I got to get up here against this guy and like and they weren't doing like a soft press. And this might be getting a little too much in the weeds. That's not interesting to people, but there are different ways to press. They were pressing in a way that was risky. It was dangerous when you deal with these guys. But I think also it was about understanding the route concepts is we saw Tyreek Hill catch one like traditional looking go ball.
Yeah.
But
Michael Davis
when you
fell.
Think about those big plays that Tyreek Hill. Yeah, but when you think about those traditional plays that Tyreek Hill, big plays he has, they aren't like traditional go balls. They're these middle-of-the-field plays or cross-field, yeah, deep digs or kind of deep overs or those sort of things. And so, like, they played aggressively inside and were smushing them down into the morass of the linebackers and the linemen, and then Tua's up and ready to throw. His line is breaking down because they're not good, and he doesn't know what to do with the ball.
I think illegal contact was called.
Corners
once.
Won that game.
The corners did win that game. For once, you are correct about that in giving undue credit to the corners. No, I mean it was unbelievable. Like, yeah, I think they called illegal contact once, if I remember. You live with that, man. This going forward, you know, the Jets I think are certainly capable of executing this. We'll see what the Bills and the Pats do, but you live with those illegal contact calls. You live with those 5 yards. Because you got to get hands on them at the line of scrimmage and try to disrupt that. It's totally worth it. You live with falling down once on a go ball. You live with that. Michael Davis got right back up, man, and said, "All right, gonna keep doing it." It's awesome.
That's an interesting way to go into a game too. It's like it's nothing I've ever experienced, but like as an analyst. Or even as a fan watching games, I think that way. But that's not how you think when you're in the locker room, or that's not how coaches talk. And I wonder if that's changed with some of these younger, like more analytically focused coaches.
Just about to say that, yeah.
I wonder if they're like, look, guys, we're going to give up something. Because like we would have play sometimes somebody like Randy Moss will make a play. We come to the sideline. The coach would say something to keep your morale up. Like they get paid to. That's the closest thing you get to it. But I don't know about coming to a game like, look, and having the message not only be heard by your cornerbacks, but be heard by your entire team, because I think that's the most uncomfortable thing is walking back to the sideline feeling like you let people down. So, like, I don't know that they're doing this, but I imagine a scenario where you're like, look, guys, we're putting a lot of pressure on this player this week. Shit's going to go wrong every now and then. But we trust that more times than not, it's going to pay off for him to do this. So, like, when whatever happens, happens, we got his back.
That, in some ways, is more impressive from Brandon Staley than all the fourth. I mean, he's been, you know, the fourth down stuff's come and gone this year, whatever you think of it. They've made two good fourth down decisions, I thought, in this game, which are necessary, and one worked out. But what you just described, having an aggressive defensive mentality, then selling it to the locker room, and then having them execute it, that is an impressive coaching performance.
And it's also, like, somewhat antithetical to what got him this job, at least the way that I think of a Brandon Staley defense.
Oh, yeah.
He hasn't been a coordinator for a long time. So, yeah, he skyrocketed right to head coach. But, like, that shows, like, growth and improvement and impressive. It's like Brandon Staley's strategy before he got this job was, let's stay deep, keep them in front of us. They can't execute this all the way down the field. And then he's like, you know what? That ain't going to work this week. Let's do it.
Yeah. I thought they had a really good game plan against the Niners, too. It, like, kind of flew under the radar because they lost. But week to week, you know, we're seeing different game plans. And, yeah, this is not the Vic Fangio defense by any means. So shout out the Chargers. Shout out Brandon Staley. Shout out Michael Davis. And
one more
the
shout
rest
out. You're
of
missing
the...
one.
Justin
missing
Herbert.
Missing one
also
final
well.
Shout out. Nope. One more.
Dominique Foxworth?
Sure, I'll take it. I was going to go Emmanuel Acho, but whatever.
Oh, no, you know, that's over, frankly.
Okay, it's over.
All right. We're not even going to talk about Justin Herbert because the defense was so fun to talk about. Let's hear your first woof.
Good question. My first woof.
I think it was the Jets.
Oh, it was the New York Jets, my first woof. They went and played the Bills. And it's a weird woof because I think that you've convinced the listeners that I give fake winners that I really turn into woofs because I want to rag on people. But this is kind of walks the line of the opposite. Is they're so damn good on defense.
They're so good.
And Garrett Wilson, like, I go back and listen to that speech that his daddy gave him before the draft all the time. I love him. He's an incredible football player and seems like an awesome human being. They are, like, just so interesting and exciting. That defense is great. But they lost. And I walked away from that game thinking, Mike White is, like, he's getting better.
He is getting better.
Yeah, like, he's making great plays. He has to string them together. He can't seem to do that, which is, like, how you actually end up scoring. It's like he can get a couple good plays and then something will go wrong. But stringing together a bunch of great plays and incumbent on the offensive line, or it's also important for the offensive line to protect him. Like, they didn't protect him. They were just so bad on offense in this game. So bad, with, like, some glimpses of, oh, they couldn't run the ball, they couldn't throw the ball, but there were some glimpses of, like, damn, good throw, Mike. Garrett can't be covered, and then yards after catch is impressive. Like, there's, like, glimpses of it, and it just feels like you're so, so, so close. And the difference in this game was smaller, I think, than what the final score they lost by 11. The difference was much smaller than that.
Yeah, it was much smaller. 12, I mean, eight. It's a bummer watching them because, and there's no reason why they would have done this, obviously. If Mike White had started the season, they'd be in the playoffs. I feel confident saying. And that's not, I'm not, like, saying he's the quarterback of the future and they need to get him under contract or whatever. Right. But he is much better than Zach Wilson. And the other thing is, like, I think I tweeted about this. He's clearly better than last year. Because this was a good referendum game because he melted down horribly against the Bills last year, the four picks. In this game, like, you know, there's not quite a consistency there. But there's improvement. And you don't usually... Yeah. Later round draft picks don't usually get that opportunity to improve the way first rounders do, but it's an undeniable trajectory where he has improved. He made some crazy, the throw where he got turned into a Pac-Man man.
Oh my God.
That ball was gorgeous. Gorgeous. Like he
He got turned into a Pac-Man man on a couple of throws, but I know which one you're talking about. There was one where somebody dove through his midsection that he completed the pass, and it was just like that. It was bad. They was folding that man up. he was taking some shots. I was thinking, like, you need to stop doing that, because they're going to make it so you can't hit quarterbacks in the midsection too. Like, they're in their never-ending journey to, like, defend quarterbacks at every in every way. Like, the way they were diving through that man was wild.
That was violent. And it is, I guess, as a Jets fan, like, I don't know, you do feel good though, because the team is so good. And, you know, next year, we'll see what happens at quarterback. This is a team that is, like, the Broncos were a quarterback away. They were a quarterback away. They just got the wrong quarterback. The defense is amazing. Yeah. I think the Jets are in the exact same position that the Broncos were in last year. So there's a lot of pressure on this organization to make the right choice, whether it's through the draft or free agency or a trade. There's going to be many options. This is the most attractive destination for a quarterback. Like, this team's ready.
I think Robert Saleh's gotten better. Yeah, we don't talk about, like, improvement in coaching that much, but, like, he's gotten better and smarter, and the way he's been managing this team this season, I think. I mean, I don't know who's behind the Zach Wilson starting this season and starting for as long as he has started and then leaning in on that, but that is the biggest error of the season for this team. Other than that, I think, like, they've been close to flawless.
Even Saleh, though, moving on from Wilson when he did was pretty bold, and compared to most coaches and how they typically treat first round quarterbacks.
I don't know if you don't.
I mean, I'm giving him the benefit, not of, like, past conservatism, which I guess.
Yeah, but it felt like, maybe it's because of the New Yorkness of it, but it felt like what was happening, because that was the same week that he did that quote about not taking responsibility. Yeah. Like, it felt like it would have been brave. It'd have been dumb brave, but it'd have been braver to keep him in there. Like, it felt like nobody in the entire city, in particular that locker room, wanted to see him under center anymore.
That's fair.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Okay, my woof is another team that's going to have an interesting quarterback decision, but I'm not going to really talk about that. It's the Seattle Seahawks, who were in pole position to get into the playoffs and then blew it against the Carolina Panthers. Now they have very difficult. They play the Jets, the Chiefs, some difficult matchups, the Niners this week. It's not great. So the woof is, though, like, they lost the game the way they've been losing games, which is their run defense, which I, like, it is more dispiriting. I got to think for players, it's more dispiriting. You can comment on this from the outside, watching a team just routinely give up 6, 7, 8 that yards a carry to the point where the offense there on the other side doesn't even have to pass.
Yeah.
Is probably the most dispiriting experience in football.
Anytime you don't have answers for something, it feels dispiriting.
They're playing their goal line defense at one point, just trying to stop it. It was so bad. Since week 10, they have the worst EPA per carry, or, you know, versus the run in the NFL.
And you know about football's, like, militaristic and, like, hyper masculine general culture.
They're still in our manhood.
Yeah.
When you get run on.
Yeah, that has to feel terrible. You're like, look, we gonna do this. You're not gonna do nothing about it. You're like, we're just gonna come in your house and open your fridge and take your food. and then walk out and you can't stop us. And we're not even going to take the whole fridge. We're just going to do it 7 yards at a time. Just walk in and out and take a bite, put that thing back down and leave and come back and do it again. It feels very disrespectful. Like, this is my house, damn it. Stay out. I'm going to play goal line defense. Oh, you're still doing it? Like, yeah, that feels feels a little bit worse than, like, someone like dropping a bomb on your house, which is like a deep pass. Like, yeah, just do it. Let's get this over with quickly.
Well, then you can, I think with also with a deep pass, you can like blame, you can say, well, this corner or whatever. Yeah. With the run defense, like the casual fan, when you're watching, it's usually hard to blame one person. I went back and I this is how you know I'm committed to my craft. I went back and watched all of Carolina's runs on Seattle, which was probably the most unpleasant thing I have done this year. And I watched Cardinals-Patriots on Monday. And there's not one person to blame. The defensive line just gets pushed around. They're missing Shelby Harris and Al Woods, who are probably their best defensive tackles. It showed. Granted, they had them in some of these other games. And then behind them, Jordan Brooks, who was good last year and has been good at points this year, was just taking the wrong angles, it felt like, on every run. A lot of it was gap runs. They were just getting pushed around. There was one, I think on the final drive, the Panthers just ran counter over and over and over. I don't think the Seahawks got a stop on a single counter run in this game. So it's a huge problem. The Seahawks run a 3-4. It makes you wonder if they have the personnel for a 3-4, if they've got the size for it. And then it raises the interesting question. I said I wasn't going to talk about this, of next season, which is the Seahawks are probably going to have a top three draft pick from Denver. Do you take a quarterback or do you take Jalen Carter, who I have had photoshopped into a wolf gray jersey and it looks great? Or do you trade down because your defense is so bad you need a lot of picks? It's a really, really difficult question, Dominique, and I don't know the answer right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's too early for us to, like, have strong feelings about that. Like, we haven't gotten – I can speak for myself. I know you are a maniac.
No, I haven't watched the quarterbacks enough to have a strong feeling.
Yeah, so I don't have – I haven't watched the quarterbacks enough to have a strong feeling about them. I think the big injury concern – well, I mean, Bryce Young won't be there, presumably, as it stands now. He won't be there. He's been – yeah, this is why we can't have this conversation.
Yeah, we can. And all this stuff is part of the conversation too, of course.
Yeah, all this stuff is going to change. And I don't know. I think the Geno's shown enough that it feels disrespectful to draft a quarterback over him, but we aren't in the business of respect, in the business of like setting your team up for success. I generally, as a matter of like general principle, don't believe in first round quarterbacks as a way to build. Yeah. As a way to
the
build
last
your
few
organization.
Years had a lot of like, teams. Yeah.
We like trick ourselves and we do it every year.
Yeah.
And we knowingly do it like, oh, this guy, if this, then that. So you can't pass him up. Trade that damn pick and stockpile. And you can find a good quarterback middle of the first round, end of the first round, beginning of the second round. I feel like unless there's on occasion somebody, a LeBron comes through that you're like, yeah, if we got Trevor Lawrence right here, we can't pass him up, you know? But most of the time, what we see happen in football is quarterbacks are put in good situations and it doesn't matter how high they are drafted. Those are quarterbacks that succeed.
Seattle's a good situation though.
Yeah.
For a young quarterback. So it's tricky. I haven't figured this out. I think if Seattle didn't have the Denver pick, this would be easy. You stick with Geno. I think he's played well. However, that pick, those options, the potential to get a guy on a rookie contract makes it a little bit trickier. But I don't have an opinion now because I haven't watched the quarterbacks enough. And ultimately it is going to come down to, do you believe one of them is truly special? Neither of us know right now. All right.
Yeah.
Let's wrap with your winner.
What did I say for my winner? Hold on. Give me a second. I'll figure it out. Lions. That's who I said. Arr. I love them. They're so fun. And they're so, like, cute. And they got to be. It's not fair if we call them cute anymore. I feel like they have passed the underdog status.
No. When you seal the game, throwing to your offensive lineman, you're cute.
Still cute.
That's a cute thing to do. That is adorable.
So cute. And adorable. their offense has been good for a while. Their defense has been much better as of late. Yeah, and I like to see that improvement. It's something that you don't see very often. And a couple teams I watched pretty closely this week, and one of those teams was the Vikings. I went back and rewatched their defense, and that may be skewing my perception on everybody else's defense because, man, are they tough to watch.
Did you see my rant on NFL Live yesterday?
You ranted about the Vikings?
I ranted about the Vikings defense, yeah.
My God. I don't know what you said. I don't want to ruin it, but did you talk about how the safeties have terrible eyes and how the linebackers don't get enough depth in zone and how Patrick Peterson is crazy aggressive and how Dantzler runs a 4-6 and can't run with anybody? Like, it's rough.
I wasn't sure if this – I came with this analogy in the moment. Sometimes I come up with it beforehand, spoiler, or I guess opening the, but this one I came up with in the moment. I don't know if it worked necessarily, but I said that the Vikings defense reminds me of me during the holidays because they sat back and watched other people cook. And that is how I feel watching them.
I saw that. I guess I don't know how I missed the rant, but I saw that analogy.
It's a whole rant. The gist of it is that they play a ton of off coverage and they allow 9.23 yards per attempt when they do so. And it's freaking, dude, the touchdown to Josh Reynolds. Jared Goff will never throw an easier touchdown in his life. I mean, it's horrible. But the Lions offense, we knew the Lions offense was good.
Yeah.
They're also getting guys back though. Chark's healthy now. Jameson Williams is getting in the mix. We all know how good Amon-Ra St. Brown is. The play caller is good. Ben Johnson it's a good offense. But the defense was the thing holding this team back. Let me ask you this. Do you feel like the defense, look, I mean, sometimes Justin Jefferson is just going to cook you. It kind of is what it is. Casually splitting double teams yet again in this game. Do you think that they're like, let's say the Lions, so they have 6 wins now. I think they probably have to win like 3 of their final 4 games, totally possible to get into playoffs. Do you think this defense is good enough to support this offense? Like,
I mean, I guess it depends on, like, what your expectations are for this team. So I don't think anybody thinks Super Bowl run. Could they win a first-round playoff game in the NFC as it is currently constructed? Maybe, depending on who they match up against. I guess if they see the Cowboys or the Eagles, and I guess maybe even the 49ers because that defense is so good, I'd see it as unlikely. They'll never end up against the Bucs. So I guess probably winning a playoff game is a stretch. Because I think Jared Goff has been good, but last 6 weeks his numbers are outstanding. He had 10 touchdowns, one interception, a great QBR. But I noticed that his completions over expected is negative. Suggests to me that he's like running this machine well to go back. And Jared Goff is another quarterback who has run machines well, but is not going to elevate you. So presumably they'll go in the playoffs. They'll play a good defense that will take things away. And you're going to ask him to make plays. And your defense is not good enough, even though they've gotten much better, which is so hard to do as a defense in the course of a season. It's so impossible to do. That's some really great coaching to be able to pull that all together in the course of a season.
Yeah, Aaron Glenn, their defensive coordinator, really turned stuff around. And it's like players that I didn't know before this season, rookies, got guys like James Houston making plays.
Kuda's playing better.
Kuda's playing better. They're better. They need more talent. They're going to be by the way, they also have an interesting – a bunch of interesting draft decisions to make. I think that this right now, like some debate over whether or not they should just ride it out with Goff next year. This is the team where I'd like to see a different quarterback, frankly, because like Seattle, it's a fantastic situation, but I think Geno Smith is better than Jared Goff.
I don't think you get any pushback. They'll have the number 4 pick if the draft happened today because of the Rams pick.
What a great time to be a Lions fan.
It is. It's been a long time where it hasn't been a great time. But right now it's a good time.
All right, Dominique, always a great time recording with you. Check out the Dominique Foxworth Show wherever you get your podcasts, and I will see you next week.